I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether it's a trip to the gym, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute meditation, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. I'll speak to people who remind us to take better care of ourselves. And what better way to take care of ourselves than to understand more about our bodies? This series, I've teamed up with Fitbit. Fitbit allows you to get to know yourself better and understand your health with insights that are unique to you. As I always say, knowledge is power, and Fitbit provides data about your health and well-being to help empower and support you in leading a balanced and healthy lifestyle. I'm so happy to have Fitbit on board, as my Fitbit helps keep me focused and on track with my goals and training. Being partnered with Fitbit is inspiring, as they're encouraging everyone to make positive changes, and I hope this podcast does too. This week on the Good Glow podcast, I speak to Dr. Dearon O'Leary. I first came across Dearon when my friend, Dr. Julie McMahon, told me I just had to follow her. I did, and over the past 6 months, I've watched her page grow as more and more people tune in to watch her updates and seek advice. I was floored when Dearon announced this summer that she had fought her own cancer battle this year, and today she's here to tell me more about what she went through. Dr. Dearon O'Leary, welcome to the Good Glow podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me.
This has been a very long time coming. I think I reached out to you first back in January when I first started my podcast. Yes. My friend Julie told me about you and I started to follow you, and I think you are absolutely incredible. And all of my followers, whenever I ask them who they would like to hear on the Good Glow, 90% of people say you. So I'm so glad you're here today.
Thank you so much for having me, Georgie. It's a privilege to be able to speak to you today. And likewise, you know, I mean, I've been following you, as you said, around that time, maybe back in January. And we've been trying to work on something since then. So it's amazing. The day has finally happened. It's lovely to have you in Cork.
Yes, I absolutely love Cork. As I was telling you off air, I got married in Castlemartyr like you.
Yeah, amazing. So you got married there in 2015. And I got married there 2 years later. That's so another thing we have in common.
I know. And I actually went down to Castlemartyr 2016 and 2017, but I haven't been there since I got sick, and I haven't brought Pia there. So I'll definitely be popping in soon. It's just my happy place. I love Cork.
Just a good place. Yeah, I like going back to Castlemartyr because it was just a good day, you know, mm-hmm. So just good, happy vibes. Yeah.
We have both been through the mill, I think it's fair to say. And I always looked to you when I was going through my recovery, and you were such a voice of reason online and a kind of calming voice. So I was floored and devastated the day that I read that you had cancer. I literally couldn't believe it. And it's been a tough few months. It's still very recent for you. How are you feeling?
You know, like we were saying off air, you know, I feel like a very similar way to you. I'm grateful to be alive. I'm happy to be moving forward. You know, I was really shocked as well, obviously, that I got a diagnosis of cancer, came out of the blue. But I'm cancer free, and I'm very, very, very grateful and thankful for my health, and you know, looking forward to moving forward. Like we were saying, you know, there's your life, there's the life you had before you had cancer, and then there's the day you were diagnosed, and then there's your life after that, and nothing will ever be the same again. But I'm looking forward to moving on. And look, I suppose as well, Georgie, you know, for a while, you know, we'll both be in follow-up, and there's the scans, and there's those scary days as well. But for the most part, you know, I'm just grateful to be alive, grateful to be healthy, and happy to be moving forward.
Well, you look the picture of health. And I think to me, that meant so much to me in my recovery when people told me that.
Yeah.
That I looked healthy again.
Yeah.
You, obviously, everyone's journey is different and it's so personal. you were in the public eye, I suppose, as you were going through this. So you would have been getting, I would presume, a lot of messages, people asking you what type of cancer you had, what your treatment was. And you decided at that time that you just wanted to keep that to yourself while you healed.
Exactly. I suppose it was never my plan, actually. It was never a plan to, you know, secretly, you know, go through it and then announce it once it had all happened. But I suppose it was for the first few days after I was diagnosed with cancer, you know, I had planned on actually saying it. But then every time it came to actually saying it, I thought, there's so much going on in my head. I'm so, so scared. I actually have no room in my head for anything else right now. And there was times, you know, I remember one of the first investigations I had was actually, it was May the 13th. And I had planned and I had taken a picture and I very almost uploaded it. And I showed it to Peter that afternoon. And I just couldn't bring myself to put it up because I thought, there'll be a wave of messages and there'll be a wave of questions, and I'm not actually able to do that. And then actually I went through all of the tests and the surgeries, and then I was eventually told I was cancer free. And even then I thought, God, am I still able to actually share this? Do I have the room in my head? But I was glad that I did. I was glad that I eventually shared it because, you know, it's a part of our story and it's a part of who we are, you know, that you had cancer and you're a cancer survivor. So I'm glad I shared the story.
It was an extremely brave thing to do, and I thought you did it in such a lovely way. I think it was about 8 weeks before I told people that I had cancer, because I definitely wanted to get a very clear picture of what position I was in.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to wait to have a number of meetings with my doctors. Yeah. I wanted my surgery to be out of the way.
Yeah.
And not that I had a following at that time, but I think even just to tell your friends, it's very much like knuckle down with just your core.
That is so what it is. Like that's exactly what I did. But I suppose, as well, you see, our journeys are different in that your journey was longer than mine. So I think that if I had had chemo radiotherapy after my surgery, that, you know, I might have shared it with that because of the support of going through that. So our journeys were different in that regard. But for, like, say I was diagnosed with cancer on May the 1st and then my surgery was on June the 17th, and that entire time I was just in my house on my own, not going to work. My mom would call over sometimes, you know, my brother, and I was just some friends, you know. It was just, as you say, knuckle down, really quiet, and I just basically stayed in that house pretty much on my own that entire time because I just knuckle down and just needed that space, you know.
And that's a long time, isn't it? It's about six weeks.
Yeah, but looking back, it wasn't until afterwards that that's kind of what Peter described, because we were describing how his journey through it was a little bit different to mine, because he'd go and face colleagues every day and, you know, how's Dearen doing, and he'd talk about it, and that was very hard on him. And I said, God, I didn't actually have to deal with any of that because I was just in the house on my own, in my own zone. And then, you know, kind of, you know, if I was having a tough day, or if I was, I remember actually really distinctly, I had an appointment at 2 o'clock on a Thursday, and it was kind of a make or break appointment. And I was just sick with nerves. Now, Peter was actually had decided to go to work that day because he just wanted to distract himself. And like, to distract myself, I just like went and like did some Instagram stories like for that whole like afternoon. So that's kind of like how I got through that time. I was just at home, quiet by myself, you know, some friends, some family, and then like Instagram the odd time, just to get my head out of that like really kind of scary space.
Denise Kenny actually speaks about that, how online she calls her followers her therapists. Yeah. And it's a release for her. Denise's
totally.
Husband, Kieran, was sick, and she put her whole life into looking after him. I don't want to speak for her, but you know, to have that Instagram, to have some sort of release is just so important.
It is. And it really got me through really, really, really difficult time. Because I think, you know, I got up, I got dressed, and it allowed me to be me as well. Because something, God, I don't know if you felt this way, Georgie, but I really worried a lot at the start that it would become my identity. And I spoke a lot about that to my mom. And I was like, I don't want this to be all of who I am. Like, I'm still me. I'm still Dirin. You know, I'm still a strong person. You know, I'm still a doctor. And like for a long time, I actually really went to people. Like, I went to my mom and my brother, and I just thought, like, sorry, I'm just getting a bit tearful now, but there was times I thought, like, will I ever be me again? Mm. And, like, you do change, of course, but I was so worried that who I was might kind of disappear. So, like, Instagram really allowed me to still be that person and kind of tap into that, like, you know, strong person and that person who, like, isn't going through cancer. So I don't know, it was distracting. I was distracting myself from what was going on, and but it, you know, it helped me, and it helped me link in to that person, that to remind myself that, like, I'm still there despite the mm-hmm. cancer. And what my mom said to me, and it was really powerful as well, was that she said that, you know, your illness is a part of who you are, Dirin, and this is a part of what's going on in your life, but this isn't all of who you are, and this will never be all of who you are. But I really needed to hear that at the time, because at the time, I really, like, I mean, look, you know yourself, it's all consuming, it's all you think about. So, you know, Instagram and, like, Denise, it really did give me that just outlet of where things are just positive and kind of happy and lighthearted. And it, you know, it kind of got me away from the cancer and talking about cancer all the time.
So beautifully said, and a positive side of social media that I think should be spoken about sometimes, the support network and the amazing people on it.
I totally agree with you, because look, social media gets such a bad rap, it really does, but it was hugely, hugely helpful to me during that time, it really was. So it is, there are positives, and it connects you to people who, you know, are like-minded. And like, I used to look at you, and my friends would send me screenshots of you, and I would just look and I would think, you know, yeah, there she is, you know, she's living her life, she's happy, she's okay, she's moved on. And like, honestly, I would really look at you and really think, like, okay, if she can do it, I can do it, like, surely I can do it too, you know. So I mean, if social media didn't exist, that wouldn't really be there, you know. So it really was helpful.
I think social media is very important for young people with cancer, because we are few and far between. We spoke during the week a lot about this podcast and what we were going to discuss, and you feel like the time is right to, you felt the time was right to speak about the type of cancer you had. And I know that that is hard for you, and only if you want to people.
Absolutely. Look, I mean, because when we had, you know, wanted to actually chat even before I was diagnosed with cancer. And like we were saying off air, that when I was actually diagnosed, I actually said to Peter, I said, if I ever share this story, I want to share it with Georgie Crawford on her podcast. When we had scheduled to meet today, I thought, look, you know, now is the time to share my story. And I did need a lot of, I needed a lot of time to kind of build myself up to it. So like I had actually told you about my diagnosis ages ago, we were chatting about it. So I was diagnosed with cervical cancer on a routine smear test on May the 1st.
You are a doctor, you do believe in screening programs.
Absolutely.
And you've said that so many times.
It saved my life.
You're alive.
Yeah,
it
saved my life. Like, it saved my life. And because and actually maybe a lot of people might not understand this. So my smear test was on May the 1st, so I had no symptoms, I was very well. And it's actually so surreal. So I that morning, I had actually not scheduled to go for a smear at all. But I was going in to get my hair done, and my hairdresser actually had to cancel because he had a family emergency, which is so unlike him, because I've been going to him for years. So he had to cancel. And then I went back and I thought, okay, so I have a morning off. What am I going to do? And I looked down, and like on my kind of like random to-do list, I saw get your smear test, because I knew it was coming up. So I rang around a few surgeries in Cork, could see if anybody would fit me in. This lady in Crosshaven, who I'd never met, just a GP, I said, okay, she can fit me in today, great. And they said, can you come to Crosshaven? Because it's about 40 minutes from the city. And I was like, yeah, sure. You know, the morning off now, you know, might as well go to Crosshaven. And I went down to that lady, and I was just like chit-chatting, and I was telling her our plans for the summer. And I was, you know, saying, oh, you know, I just need my smear, thanks, and I'll see you later. But she actually saw the cervical cancer with the naked eye. So I think that a lot of people, I think even in my family, didn't understand that. They were saying, but you have to wait for results of a smear, Darren. You know, you can't know you've cervical cancer. And I said, she knows. So,
and did she tell you?
She did, yeah.
What did she say?
Yeah, so, oh, like, it, she was right to tell me, because I needed to know how serious it was.
Okay.
I was by myself. And no, I'm really glad she told me there and then, and didn't fudge it.
Mm.
Because she was bracing me for the fact that, like, you need to get this sorted out now, Darren. You know, like, you're not going to work tomorrow. Like, this, you have to sort this out. So I sat down after the smear test was done, and I was looking at her, and I thought, she looks a little bit like she's kind of psyching herself up to say something. And I thought, what's that about? And I was looking at her, and I just recognised something in her, and I thought, what's she going to say to me? And we sat down, and she said, okay, Darren, your cervix looks abnormal. And I was like, okay, sure, look, there's loads of abnormal, you know. I said, grand, abnormal, fine. And then there was maybe about 20 seconds, and I just said, wait, how abnormal? And she was like, it was very, very abnormal, and it felt abnormal. And I actually said to her, I said, could it be cancer? And she said, I think it is.
Oh, my God.
I know. And God, I've never even spoken about it. So she told me what I needed to do. So I needed colposcopy. So that's a camera test where you look at the cervix with the camera, basically. And she was like, you know, we need to get colposcopy as soon as we can, because she actually could see the cancer with the naked eye. Like, it was an open and shut case. Like, she actually said at the time, she said, we really don't even need to send your smear, because we know now, you know. So she told me, and I thought, okay, right, okay, you know, we'll just go, and I'll go get colposcopy. And she said she'd get back on to me when she could figure out a date or whatever. And I got up and I walked out to the reception, and I just said to the receptionist, I was like, I'm going to faint. And I tried to get myself to the floor, but I did faint. I was just so shocked. I was just so, like, and it's just kind of like that thing where you can actually, if you're so emotionally overcome, you do faint. So she brought me back into her, the doctor came out and brought me back into the room. And she was like, well, I called Peter. And I was like, no, he's at work. I can't tell him. You know, what am I going to do? I can't land this on him. So actually, it was just the strangest morning. So in Crosshaven, it's very near my mother-in-law's house. So I just said, look, I'll go to my mother-in-law. And I kind of went down to her to talk to her. And it kind of went from there. Yeah, so it was a very surreal morning in that. And I was meant to meet friends that afternoon. And I remember, I think I had to text them to be like, oh, I'm not going to be there, guys, but I'll catch up with you another day, you know. So it was just the weirdest morning that I woke up that day to go in to get my hair done. I know. Like, it's just, and I think, like, look, I suppose, I don't know what way the stars were aligned that day, but I do think that something landed me down to that lady's surgery in Crosshaven, because it was just the strangest place for me to be. Why would I be there, you know? But something got me there. Something, somehow, some way, I got in there. She had a same day appointment, which is just so extraordinary, you know, and not usual. But going for my smear that day saved my life, because eventually I went on. I had lots of tests and scans and surgeries and, you know, looking for lymph nodes. You know how that is, staging it. So it was eventually, it was stage one cervical cancer, which was treatable with surgery. So
you're blessed.
I know. It's really, Georgie, like, that's exactly it. And that's, like, people sometimes, I think, maybe think it's unusual that I do consider myself lucky, but I mean, I am lucky. It was stage one. And attending for that smear that day saved my life. I'm here and I'm healthy, and it was caught early, because if I delayed that 1 year, I could have spread into lymph nodes, could have gone into, you know, my abdomen, my lungs, or, you know, it could have spread a lot further. And, you know, if I delayed that even a few months, the story could have been very, very, very different, you know. So attending for my smear on time, and keeping an eye, because I was, you know, always keep an eye that I'm registered at Cervical Check, and that I go on time. And I mean, I'm sorry, I'm doing a lot of talking, but I suppose as well, like, I've always been somebody, like, I would book a day off work to get my smear. Now, I didn't that day, but the other 2 days, I remember I booked days off. I was leaving the hospital. Like, your smear is very, very important, you know, so just book the time off and get it done, because it could save your life. It really could. It saved my life.
Such an amazing message, and such an important one. And I also think nobody's going to do it for you, and I don't think you should rely on the letter to come through the door to remind you. I think you need to be on top of these things yourself. Totally. Like Oprah says, we're all responsible for our own bodies. Nobody's going to do it for us.
And that's never a truer word said. And I say that on my Instagram as well. You don't need to wait for a letter from Cervical Check. You do not, because that letter, you could move house. The letter might not. I mean, post is not always 100% reliable. You know, I mean, and look, the website is there online. The Cervical Check website is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. And their phone number is good as well. You know, if you phone them up, you know, they'll take calls. So, yeah, it is your responsibility, and it is your responsibility to know when the smear is due, to get it done, to book the time off work, you know. And, you know, I sometimes look, people can be a bit difficult about getting time off work, you know, whatever. But prioritise it. Get it done, you know. Because, as you say, nobody can do it for you. You know, you just have to do it. And you're responsible for your own body and your own health, you know, and you just have to face up and do these things, you know.
I think you are so incredibly brave to tell your story and be so honest about it. I know, like, the first time I told my story, I felt like I jumped off a cliff.
Yeah.
It is the hardest, scariest thing to do, but it's so selfless, because this will trigger something in somebody listening. And I just think it's so important. And thank you so much for your honesty.
Oh, well, Georgie, I mean, it's coming from you, you know, like, you're the bravest lady ever. Like, and I've been looking, like, as I said, I had been looking to you as somebody who was strong and who had gotten through cancer. And look, hopefully that I can maybe be that person to somebody else going through it, because going through it is really, really difficult. And hopefully people can see that, look, you can get through to the other side. But yeah, my message is that, you know, that smear test, going that day, it saved my life big time. You know, like, I just, like, to have the thing about cancer, and what Peter always says to me, thing about cancer is getting it early. You know, if you get it earlier, you're there with a fighting chance, and that's what smear tests do. So smear tests really are designed to actually detect pre-cancer cells. So, and they're easily treated, you know, so just get your smear test done. It can really, really, really definitely save your life.
Peter is obviously the love of your life, such a support system. You guys are awesome.
Like you and your family and your
But it's
system.
Hard on a relationship. It's hard when this happens and to you when you're just married and you're trying to figure out your life together, and you do think, why did this happen to us? But it's so amazing to see how strong you are, and clearly he's your rock.
And totally. He is. And look, he's very, very, he's very sensible. He's able to, and because he's a typical surgeon, he sees things as black and white, you know. So
is that a good thing?
It's good for me.
Okay.
You know, you know, obviously sometimes I'm pulling my hair out about it, but, you know, if I ever got overwhelmed or very scared or what if this, what if that, what if that, what if that, he would say, well, no, like, this is the information we have today. So, you know, like,
Jamie used to say that to me.
But it's so, and it's so, it's very powerful, you know, to be just, you know, to take it one scan at a time, one day at a time. So he was quite black and white about it. But as you say, it is tough on a relationship because the men go through it as well, you know. And sometimes I used to look and I used to think, God, like, in ways it's harder on them, I think, sometimes because they worry about what will happen to you. Whereas, I suppose, as the patient, you're kind of in survival mode, aren't you? You know, a lot of the time you're like, okay, just survive. And it is hard on them because I know that it was hard on Peter because, like, he, you know, was obviously continuing to go to work and had to face a lot of people and a lot of questions. You know, obviously very well, many very nice people, but I didn't have to do that as much as he did, you know. So, like, it's so tough on a partner of somebody going through cancer as well. I can't imagine what that's like, but I know there were times I was thinking, you know, this is so tough on him as well. And that's kind of, I guess, where bits of guilt and things come in like that, you know.
Let's talk about the recovery and putting your runners back on and getting out and doing some exercise again. And how important is exercise and what does it mean to you?
Well, I mean, it's part of who I am, and it always has been, actually. I've always been a very athletic person. My mom wanted me to be like a musician. There's a lot of music in her family, and like I used to like hide when it was time for like the violin lessons. I literally used to hide. And I always wanted to run or play tennis. So I always loved moving, and I've actually always exercised. But in terms of, you know, getting through, you know, a cancer diagnosis and treatment and then helping me move on, it helped me in so many ways. I suppose coming up to the surgery, I exercised a lot more than I would have ordinarily done because I just had more time. And then I think it made me a lot stronger then in terms of after surgery. I get asked, one of the really, really common question I get asked is, I'm going for surgery for X, Y and Z next month, and I want to know what I can do to make the recovery better. And I get asked about supplements and should I take this supplement? Should I take a probiotic? And I really, really believe that for me and getting through me surviving or recovering from the surgery, that being, you know, fit from a cardiovascular point of view really helped me. And, you know, even just things like core strength and things like that, or just, you know, like muscle memory. I remember I thought about that a lot actually coming up to the surgery. I was saying, okay, if I'm really fit now and I'm running now and, you know, I'm moving, I'm staying fit, that then recovering from surgery, you know, I'll have that muscle memory and kind of be able to kind of bounce back into it. Now, obviously, look, you have to take it easy after surgery. But I think I am fitter now, I would say, than I have been in years, you know. So it's a part of who I am. It, you know, does release endorphins. It is good for your physical and mental health because it releases endorphins that like mimic morphine, that like are calming. So, you know, I couldn't be without it. I couldn't be like without being able to like move and run. And
so how often should we exercise? I know it's, I think the World Health Organization say half an hour a day, 5 days a week. But can you kind of split that up and do two kind of big sessions a week, or
I suppose, yeah, like two big sessions. Well, that would be, they'd be two very, very big sessions. But look, yeah, I suppose it's about moving, cardiovascular fitness. 150 minutes a week of moderate intensity. So it doesn't have to be very high intensity stuff, you know. But you do have to kind of get moving, get your heart rate up a little bit, be a little bit puffed out. And I think that, as you say, like, I think probably, I think two big sessions is
stretching it.
It is stretching it. But you know what? Look, we all have to do what we have, what we can fit into our own lives. Because there have been times I had no exercise at all, Georgie. Like, I suppose I need to make that clear as well, that sometimes my life was so busy that there was no time. And that's okay too. Look, sometimes there actually physically is no time to exercise. And I think maybe I'm not a great fitness advocate from that point of view, because I know a lot of people always say, like, no excuses or like that type of thing.
Yeah.
But I remember when I used to see the no excuses like hashtags or whatever, and I'm like, guys, but like, I'm literally in the hospital 100 hours this week. Like, where do you, like, what am I supposed to do? So I think that, like, there are actually people out there, and I get messages from women saying, like, dear, and I commute 2 hours in the morning, I commute 2 hours in the evening, and I have four children, and I, you know, and it's like, okay, that this person has no time to exercise. But I think that if you can try to make an effort in some way, I think we'll all have busier patches in our lives. And look, if you do have spare time, do make the effort. And I think that if you're very, very, very stretched, I remember I used to go for walks in the hospital and during lunch hour or something like that, people probably thought I was crazy, but I really did want to get out under the fresh air and move and exercise a little bit. So I think as long as we're making an effort, you know, we're doing okay.
We'll get back to the conversation in just a minute, but first I wanted to give you the latest update on how I'm getting on with my Fitbit Versa 2. Like me, Fitbit are all about healthy habits. Positive habits are so important for achieving balance and good health. My goals are to drink more water, to eat well, and to exercise often. I logged these goals and my Fitbit has helped me keep on top of trying to achieve them. I also love the personalized breathing sessions where I can take a few minutes out every day to just relax. One of the biggest impacts my Fitbit has had in my life is that I no longer sleep beside my phone. I always had my phone close by for my alarm and to tell the time, but now I have a Fitbit that can do both. I leave my phone on the other side of the room now, which stops me scrolling when I get into bed. For me, this is a game changer. As well as other handy features like the always-on display, Fitbit Pay, and being able to control Spotify from my wrist. My Fitbit is for sure making my life easier. Now, back to our conversation. Talk to us a little bit about your Instagram and your voice of reason online. Is there pressure there, or do you really enjoy hearing from people? Because your Instagram page is just exploded. Yeah. Like, every time I log on, your followers are growing, and that's just a testament to how great you are, and people trust you and like you. And that's all been kind of quite recent.
It I suppose it did grow, like, very fast in the first year. But, like, look, I really enjoy it because, look, I'm sure people ask you as well, you know, about it and say, you know, how do you feel about putting yourself out there and things like that. But fundamentally, I think that, you know, I just enjoy it and it's not work for me. Like, you know, I do a lot of questions and answers sessions. I really enjoy those. I like doing the stories. And I suppose there's a few reasons I started to do what I do on Instagram. And I think a lot of it was that I just... Instagram is a place where there's a lot of misinformation, and I thought, instead of giving out, you know, amongst my friends about seeing like total misinformation out there, just put out the facts there myself, you know. So that's a lot of what drove it, was that, in that I really wanted to put the facts out there and try to put the facts into Instagram about health as much as I could.
I'm sure you get messages all the time from people who've said they check themselves because of you. And I know you'll be really humble about it and not tell me unless I ask you. But I'm sure those messages come in.
The most common one I do get actually is that I went for my smear test because of you. And that they come from younger girls. And, you know, that really, you know, that makes me so happy. I really, really, like, you know, I do love those messages.
Very rewarding to kind of be using your platform for something so positive.
It's like the way you used your platform. You know, I can only imagine the amount of women that say to you that they check themselves because of you, or that, you know, women say that they look at you as somebody who survived cancer and they believe they can survive too. And it is very rewarding. And sometimes I think God, people are actually listening to me, like, you know, like, because I think a lot of the time you feel like people are just aren't listening at all, or like a lot of patients, like in real life, you know, like, thanks for the advice, Darren, but I'm doing it my way, but like, grand, okay, you know, whatever. So I'm like, oh my God, like, these people are doing what I'm like suggesting. So no, it is, it's lovely, it really is nice. And particularly I think the ones where younger girls say, I went for my first smear test today, or I registered with cervical check, or I got the HPV vaccine. That's the other one. I'm like, because the HPV vaccine is very expensive, unfortunately, for people who aren't included in the school program. So I think, oh my God, this girl who's, you know, 27 went out and got the couple of hundred euro together and went out and informed herself about what she can do and went and got the vaccine because of something she saw on my page. I think, number one, I'm still a little bit shocked that people are listening to me. And then number two, that they went out and acted on it, you know. So it's amazing.
That's amazing. You said at the start, your life before cancer and your life after cancer. And I can't help but look at my life that way.
Yeah.
What's the difference in your life now? Is there, has it brought more positivity to your life? Like, I know that's such a weird question, but
I think actually, yeah, I hadn't thought about it like that, Georgie, but when you say it like that, that actually makes sense, in that you're more thankful for what you do have. And I mean, you do actually, you know, wake up, or going to bed at night, you know, so thankful for just getting to like be alive and in the moment, you know, and that, you know, that you're still enjoying your days with your husband, you know, because you go through, when you're going through cancer and a diagnosis, you're thinking, how many of these days do I have left, you know? So actually, in a way, yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but it probably does bring more positivity to your life. Another thing, maybe I think as well, it kind of simplifies your life in a way, doesn't it, as well? Because it's very clear, like, about what's important and what's not. So I think probably I'm a lot clearer now in my head about what my priorities are. And then as well, look, it's cliche. It's so cliched, but it's true. You know, I don't worry about the future that much in ways. I suppose, you know, obviously, look, I would worry about some things in the normal way that everybody else does, but you know, you need to kind of live for the moment and go with your gut and, you know, not take the future for granted, I suppose.
I thought it was really nice to get the good days back, because there's so many hard days, and I was driving down here today and I can just get myself here, meet you, drive home, that's perfect to me. That's all I ever wanted.
Yeah,
it's just the freedom to live.
Yes, exactly. And like, I have goosebumps when you say that. But and maybe that might sound, other people might not understand that you're so grateful to be able to get in the car and drive down, or maybe like listen to a bit of music or whatever. And like those, when you, it's simple things like that, and you're saying, I'm so grateful and happy I get to do this. Like, there was some night this week, Peter was like watching like another match.
Oh no, does he watch matches?
Oh no, oh my God, like all the time. Like soccer, he's like obsessed, right? So there was, and it was like, I was on the stairs and I had the choice to go in there, just sit down and be with him and leave the match be on. Or I was just going to go and sit in the kitchen and do my own thing, you know, because, mm-hmm. and I think probably before it had been like, oh, you're watching a match, you know. But I was like, oh, like, it's so precious, precious and so special that, like, he's here at home with me. Like, and I'm so grateful for that, you know. Yeah. So I obviously just went in and just sat there, like, and just, like, watching a match. I'm like, who's playing and who's he? You know, whereas before, you know, I would, like, might not, like... Before, like, and then it's those simple things where you're like, I'm so lucky I get to do this, you know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Oh my God, that's hilarious.
I wonder how long it'll last. I mean, I'm sure I'll be back to giving out about the matches again soon again.
Another thing I love from your Instagram is, okay, we all know you're a doctor, but you're also very glamorous. You love fashion, and you say, you know, doctors can like fashion too, or doctors can dress up and look like this.
Yeah, well, I see, I don't know, it's a weird one for me, Georgie, because as well, I'm not the only doctor who likes clothes, like, for sure, number one. Like, I have some, like a lot of doctors do. I suppose, look, I just put it out there, and, like, mm-hmm. you know, I put out, like, the selfies of my clothes and things like that. And even I sometimes, I'm like, this is really weird. Like, you know, how do I go from like fashion posts to like my medical posts? And obviously it's a very, very strange combination. But it was actually my hairdresser the other day said, she was like, well, you know, people follow you for the medical stuff. But she was like, all women really like fashion. So, you know, look, why not?
Perfect combination.
So, well, look, it's just, I suppose it's, I don't know, it's very random. And I'm very thankful to my followers. I'm like, really, like, thank you for putting up with this, because it can be like anything. But yeah, I definitely want to make the point, actually, that I'm like definitely not the only doctor that's like into clothes. I met a consultant that I worked for years ago in Dunn's the other day. I don't want to give too much away, but like, she was literally like wearing these like killer Louboutin heels, like doing her like Sunday groceries. So like, yeah, she's like, she's a style queen. So like, there are like plenty of doctors very into fashion.
Tell us a little bit about what's next for you. Obviously, we're all glued to see what you're going to do. And there's so much you can do. Is your future in medicine?
Yes. Mm. Like, I'm a doctor, and like, I know that some people say it's not good to have your identity wrapped up in your job, but really a doctor is who I am, like, in my soul. It's, and that'll always be that, like, my job is all, will, and being a doctor will always be one of the most important things to me. So I will always be a doctor, even though I don't want to look back in this years and when I have an entirely different career, and I feel silly for saying it. But look, I suppose this is how I feel right now in this moment. Mm. I love medicine. I love what I do. I love talking to patients. I love problem solving with patients. I suppose I don't know exactly what's in the future for me. I'm grateful at the moment that my job, so I'm working now with Videodoc, and that, I was saying to you earlier, it allows me a bit more freedom to kind of try to dip into like the media world a little bit more. So right now I'm kind of balancing that, trying to do a bit more media work and kind of see where it takes me. And look, you know, if it goes, I'm not sure what direction it'll go, but we'll see. But I'll always be a doctor, and it'll always be very important to me.
It's nice to just wake up and do what makes you happy. So
yes.
Not to put too much pressure on yourself and just see where the universe takes you.
See where the universe takes me. And I suppose where it takes Peter and I as well, you know. So, yeah, I don't know. But I suppose it's just, as you say, where the universe takes you. Yeah, that's the plan.
I wanted to ask you about your healthy habits. People always ask me, like, how can I change without a cancer diagnosis or an earthquake? And I always say, like, healthy habits, start small. That's the only way that they will turn into, like, long-term lifestyle choices.
Yeah.
So what are your healthy habits?
Oh God, okay. So, look, obviously I love to exercise. What else? Oh, God, I have healthy habits. So there's other healthy things that I do. I talk about my feelings. If I'm worried about something, I talk to Peter. You know, I think that's healthy. I recognise my limits. I recognise when I'm overworked. I know when to say no. I sleep, I prioritise my sleep hugely, which can sometimes be a selfish thing, actually, you know, if you're kind of overly kind of obsessive, I suppose, about trying to get enough sleep. But I do, I try to prioritise 8 hours sleep every night, I guess, and then other kind of healthy things to do are, I think, probably, maybe one of the healthiest things, actually, maybe that I do is, as I said, is recognising my limits and recognising when to say no.
Are you good at that?
I'm better at it now. Mm. I'm much better at it now because there were times that I was not able to say no, and then I didn't recognise when I was becoming overwhelmed or burnt out. So now I know when enough is enough and I can't do any more. And Peter's good at helping me kind of recognise that as well. And I think that's probably one of the healthiest things that I do in my life, actually. And then obviously, look, screening, cancer screening is important. And, you know, just flu vaccine, that type of thing.
It was like, this day has been coming for so long. I can't believe I'm seeing you in the flesh, sitting in front of me.
Yeah.
I hope that we can stay friends for a long time.
Yeah, we will. We surely will. Because I think that, you know, as you say, there's not many of us go through this, and particularly at a young age. So, you know, we'll always be friends because we'll always share that. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on to the Good Glow.
Thank you so much for coming to Cork. It was a pleasure to have you. Thank you, Georgie.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast with thanks to Fitbit. If you're enjoying this podcast, please hit the subscribe button and leave a review. For more on my story, you can follow me on Instagram at georgie.crawford.